Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Slaughter Podcast will be discussing topics that some listeners may find disturbing.
If you're still with us, then you're a weirdo.
But don't worry, you're our kind of weirdo.
So, this is episode one of Slaughter. My name is Lucy.
My name's Emma.
And I've been so excited to record this podcast for such a long time. We're both big true crime fans.
Yeah, you've been blowing up my phone about research, research, research.
So it's finally here. Slaughter is finally a podcast. I'm super excited. We've been into true crime for a long time, but I think it started really that we're into kind of weird documentaries. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, definitely. We'd always be like, oh, have you seen this one yet? Have you seen this one yet? Always about people on the fringes of society, yeah. I think, has been an interest.
So now we finally got a podcast about murder. I think it's that this topic is so popular now, we don't really need to have any major disclaimers. I think it's not that weird to like true crime.
Yeah, I think the stigma is gone. You know, you can be into murder and still be a relatively nice person.
yeah. It's okay to be into murder. So, I've been plugging the podcast a little bit on Twitter. It's called Slaughter the Pod, the account that we're using. We've already got 5 followers on there. So, if you're already a follower on Twitter, you can be one of those people who said, I was there right
You
the
were there before it was cool.
Yeah, you were there before it was a thing.
We have already reserved you front row seats to Slaughter the Live Tour.
You were there when we conceived the podcast.
Yeah, you spunked insiders this idea.
So, thank you so much for those people already following. If not, just catch us on Slaughter the Pod. There's no apostrophe in the title of the Twitter because that's not a thing.
They just can't hack the level of grammar that we're bringing.
Right, I love an apostrophe.
Coming at ya.
So the premise is that we're going to do 2 murders a week, one each. I think basically that idea, because if you ever seen 2 teachers try and teach the same class, co-teaching is not a thing.
Team teaching does not work.
So we thought if we took one
each. It's more like a death match.
Yes.
Who is going to win?
Who's going to do the most teaching? And we're both teachers, so we just knew that was just not a way it was going to work. So we're going to do one each. First episode, who's going to go first?
Lucy!
Really? Decide. Do you want to say it? Okay.
Yeah.
The idea is that we're going to have a look at UK murders. Not necessarily serial killers. It can be one-offs, but we're going
to
have a look.
Not because we're xenophobic. No. Let me get that out there. But I've listened to, obviously, a lot of true crime podcasts, and I keep thinking, you know what? Where are these big hitters that we keep hearing about?
And is the UK as bad as America for murder? We're going to find out a little bit. So I've chosen to do, as my first murderer, James Fairweather. Have you heard of him?
James Fairweather. Is he recent?
He's fairly recent. He's Britain's youngest serial killer.
No, I have just seen a headline and a photograph of him.
Yeah. I mean, he's not a looker. Born in Colchester in Essex. So he's, that's sort of near London-ish, Essex. I mean, I'm going to get caught out of my geography.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, you can get a tube into parts of London.
Yeah, it's not a tube, it's London.
But like, it's like, yeah, it's like an hour, though.
Essex is quite a big area. So
it's
like
a county, right?
Yeah, quite a quiet area. I think Colchester is a smallish town.
Yeah.
Quite chilled out. So James Fairweather,
was I have seen the right picture, right? Like the jam jar bottom glasses.
Yeah.
Like buzz cut. Yeah. Like your mum did it in the
That's
kitchen.
Him. That's him, yeah.
Got it.
So, James was born in Colchester, lived there all his life. He had a normal childhood. He was kind of described as shy and polite at primary school. His mum said that after he joined secondary school, he began spending a lot of time alone in his room. I mean, if you're going to set alarm bells for a teenager behaving weirdly, being alone in your room, I mean, it's not really...
The list of things that he could be up to is, endless.
All teenagers are alone in their room. That's where the porn is.
That's where the porn is. That's where you have your first joint out the window.
Yeah.
Never did it, Mum.
So nothing too weird yet. He was interested in darts. He used to play darts with his dad.
Yeah, that's a alone activity in something, your room.
Something that was weird... He was called James Fairweather. His dad was also called James Fairweather.
Love when that happens.
I think that's so weird. Why would you name your child the same name?
I'm definitely going to name my child Emma. Like, whenever I hear a name, I don't prefer it. Like, I like my name. I think I'm amazing. Like, if I could choose to name you after anybody, why not the person I love the most?
Yourself. Me.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it must be just a post... catastrophe. I mean, it must be Russian roulette.
I feel like it's linked to that sort of... They've probably got, like, a St. George flag hanging out a bedroom window somewhere. Like, that really strong, like, nationalism, you know, patriot sense of, like, you're going to carry on my legacy, even if that legacy is...
carry on my name.
Working in the call centre in Colchester.
Yeah. I mean, I guess...
But I feel like it's that, like, a sense of purpose of, like, yeah. I'm giving, like, I've mattered.
My father was called James and his father was called... I mean, I get passing on the last name, the family name, and he's a boy, so he will be doing that, but to pass on the first name, I don't understand the tradition.
Is it, like, Jimmy? One of them's a Jimmy?
Jimmy. Yeah.
Jim Bob.
So... He received extra support at school. He had very good attendance. So he didn't go to special school, but he did have extra help at school. And I think he did okay at school. However...
I don't know.
It was secondary school. There's kind of confusing reports because some people said there was a trigger and some people said that he just started to go downhill when he got to secondary school, but he did begin to get more violent. Now, I'm not sure what kind of school this was, but...
I'm going to say number one, bullying.
Not massively.
You think?
Not massively.
Like, with those glasses, reportedly. Same name as your dad. Like, if someone at school had the same name as your dad, like, they're going to get called... Like, they're going to say there's incest happening. Although you can't, because obviously gave birth. But, like, the people would make fun of that, for sure.
I don't know, it might be a popular thing in Colchester.
I'm just thinking of, like, the number one thing where I've seen children get angry is usually because, like,
bad things are happening. Right, well, this would make me angry. His teacher wrote on his report, in his report, he is basically a thug. And it got sent home. Where was the quality assurance there? He's basically a thug. Talk about typecasting. This was not that long ago.
But, like, to get labelled a thug, like, he obviously must have displayed a lot of bad behaviour leading up to it, which should have been mentioned before. He's a thug. Like, it should be like, oh, today was the first time he hit someone, not...
So
did
he
you
was
know?
15 in 2014, so we're not talking a long time
ago. I was teaching then.
This is
then.
A recent report that got sent home. A teacher said he's basically a thug and they thought that was all right. We'll send that back.
Secondary teachers,
I can't I couldn't believe it. So his parents worked long hours, so he had lots of time alone, not unusual. So he was doing God knows what in his house. going home, lighting fires, watching porn, feet up on the sofa. And he lost his grandmother when he was age 12, and that basically upset him quite a lot. And
I don't know, I'm not a fan of the using grandparents.
I know. I mean, it's not normal, is it?
Like, if there's one thing that all grandparents do, it's die.
At some point.
Yeah.
So, other people's reported a sudden change in year 11. And he reportedly said, when asked what he wanted to be when he was older, he said a murderer.
What? When did he say that?
He said it to another kid. But, to be honest, kids say stupid stuff to me at school all the time.
Of that ilk?
Well, I mean, it's not beyond the realm. If I said, what do you want to do when you're older? And they went, oh, I want to be a murderer. I mean, probably it's the delivery. You'd sense a hint of sarcasm coming from them. Whereas I assume that he was completely deadpan with not a hint of irony.
So, I mean, as far as red flags go, that one's, like, flashing neon at the same time.
He also mentioned about coming to school to shoot everyone. He thought that was a good idea. He never did that. He did mention that. Basically, he was a bit weird, as kids.
But why didn't he shoot people, America?
Because we don't have guns. Learn from us. So, he was an outcast. He was a loner. He wasn't particularly bullied, from what I hear.
No, because he'd bloody shoot you.
Yeah, because he was threatening all the kids at school. He began watching slasher films, violent porn, researching different serial killers, and he particularly liked Peter Sutcliffe.
The Yorkshire Ripper.
If we're going to class... researching serial killers abnormal. I mean, my internet search history.
We're on a list right now. No, I think I'd seen that rings a bell. I'd seen something like, again, I think it was probably part of the headline or sort of saying spent hours researching serial killers, and I was like, if that is something that gets you in trouble, dear God, like I don't even use incognito browser. Like
I really need to computer.
Yeah, my work laptop.
I'll just be like, oh, Mary West, what's she like? So this is when he started to kind of do things that were not just talking, it was getting a bit serious. So he robbed a newsagent at knife point in 2014, and he just took cigars. But at knife point, I mean, that's...
Cigars?
He took cigars. Obviously, he couldn't buy them. He thought, oh, well, I'll rob them.
He went, like, fuck cigarettes.
Yeah.
I'm going for a cigar.
Cigars. So, and then the reason he got caught, because they phoned the police, but they didn't have a name or who it was. But he went into school and he bragged about it to his classmates, who told teachers, who put him in isolation, and then they told the police. So then the police came into school.
That's arresting. Quite good.
I mean, imagine that at school, the police turn up and lead you away. I mean, you'd sort of...
Well, judging by his ambitions... He was probably loving it.
There's that teacher going, I told you it was a
job. Like, that's your reputation sealed, isn't it? No one is going to mess with
job
you.
Job done. So he got a 12-month youth referral order, which I've got no idea what that is. I don't know if that's in a young offenders, but I think you're just watched over for a year.
Like a parole type
thing. Because there's nothing about him. I looked and there wasn't much about him being in prison. So then,
for stealing as well, I don't think you get institutionalised for that.
I think it's more like you've got a youth worker kind of checking in on you and kind of regular trips around the house. He also had a temper, and he smashed the windows of a random house because he felt angry one day. So he just kind of flipped out and started
Not
smashing.
That polite anymore, are we?
No. All because of Nanny.
What? Is that why he's angry, because she died?
Well, I don't know. So at home, he was watching brutal porn to get aroused, and he started referring to women as hot and fit. Obviously, he wasn't allowed to sort of sit with other kids at school after this point. He was kept in isolation for his exams. He went in for lessons in isolation, so he's kind of kept away from everyone. But he didn't really know how to talk to women, and he was kind of really derogatory and really not a very nice person about women, so he didn't really...
I'm at least glad they put me in isolation, because I was one of those kids at school that, because I was like a good kid in class, I would always have to sit next to the worst behaved boy in that class. Like every time, like there was not a single lesson where I was sat next to a friend. It was like, oh, you can sit next to Emma because she'll make sure you work hard. No, this guy is threatening to rape me every 2 minutes. Like,
yes.
It was horrific.
When the teacher's not listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when he was 15... in March 2014, he snuck out of his house and he basically wandered the streets looking for someone to attack. He decided that night.
That is like some creepy ass prelude to Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
It's like, gotta beat them all.
Gotta stab them all. So he basically wandered the streets and was like, right, I'm gonna do it tonight. And in the middle of the night. It's terrifying. So
like little practices for building up to his ambition of being a murderer.
Yeah.
Like.
So James Atfield, a father of five, had...
Whoa.
He'd, I know.
How old was this guy?
He wasn't that old. He'd basically gone to the
Wait,
pub.
He was killed?
Yeah.
I'm really sorry for saying he might be old.
No, he's not old. He'd got drunk at a local pub. And he basically, this guy had been in a serious car accident. He'd had a brain injury and he'd been in a coma. And he'd come out of that coma and he was learning to sort of walk again, and he was kind of slow in his responses. And he'd
definitely alcohol then.
He'd gone to the pub and got hammered as well. And he, on the way home from the pub, I mean, it's pretty bad. The way home from the pub, he sat down to rest and fell asleep, just randomly on the floor, not even on a bench.
No.
And James Fairweather, on his way along, this is the young lad we've talked about, he saw him and he stabbed him 102 times in a random attack. One of the stabs was in the eye.
Oh my goodness.
In the eye.
I did promise I would try not to gasp when you read me things, but...
But it's shocking, isn't it? It's shocking.
He was, do you know what's shocking as well? 15. It's like, you know, if you see... I mean, not so much anymore, but like... I mean, our city's done quite well with for homelessness, but like when you see someone like maybe asleep on the street, like you never know. Like I think there can be like a real tendency to just be like, oh well, they're probably homeless, but they could have collapsed, they could have a brain injury and need help. Like
there's a lot of research into that if people like fall over, if they appear to be drunk, people won't help them.
Because I did one time when I was at uni, there was someone asleep in the middle of the day, like in the red hot sun, and we went over and helped them, and they were pretty aggressive, so we did get the police for them in the end because they were drunk. But I just think, you know what, if someone's asleep on the street, that's definitely a reason to check they're okay.
Yeah, although I can understand why people wouldn't want to put themselves in risk as well, because
true.
If you just go over to some random, particularly if you're out on your own and it's night and there's someone just lying, I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? So, as a result of this, I mean, the community was absolutely gobsmacked. They were devastated that this person, 102 times, father of five, had been murdered.
Just like played him, isn't it?
Police found a partial footprint but had nothing else to go on. Obviously, they didn't know it was someone so young. They asked the public for information, and 3 months later, there was nothing.
Because, like, immediately you hear that kind of thing, like, oh, someone found late at night, stabbed that many times. Like, the profile for who you're picking... Well, obviously I'm not a police officer, but I'd be like, right, either seriously mentally deranged or drunken fight.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be thinking, oh, it's a teenage boy, an opportunistic teenage boy.
Yes, because he had nothing to do with it. It was just random. So then you had a lady, 3 months later, Almania, a 31-year-old student. Now, she'd only been in the UK for 6 weeks, and she was walking home from a lecture. I don't think this was at night time, but I'm not absolutely sure.
It can't have been that late.
She was found stabbed to death. She'd also been stabbed in both eyes. She was brutally murdered. And Fairweather was actually questioned about this, because they questioned everyone in the area had had previous convictions, because they thought, this isn't someone who's not got in trouble before, this is someone who's got a history of violence in some way. So he was not held, there's no evidence, and he denied involvement. So he was questioned for a long time, but there's nothing to go on. So then 26th of May 2015, 11 months later, so he was free after all this for such a long time. Members of the public phoned the police after seeing Fairweather acting suspiciously. So basically, this woman was coming out of a shop and everyone was on high alert even this long later, because they were all so freaked out by what had happened. And they'd been quite close by these two murders. And a woman had come out of the shop and there was a guy hanging around, standing around. And instead of going past him, she walked another way and she phoned the police. I mean, good girl.
Yeah.
That's really... I mean, if you ever feel awkward and you think, oh, I'm going to look a bit weird if I change direction, just change direction.
Yeah, because there is that thing, like, I remember being younger and being like, oh, I can't have people see me walk back on myself, I'll have to walk all the way around this school building or whatever. But yeah, well done.
Because most people wouldn't do that. If someone looks a bit weird,
quicken your pace maybe, or just...
Well, I'll assume they're a murderer. But good job she did, because she could have been the third victim. So he had a knife when he was taken in by police. He'd had a knife in his pocket. And they questioned him. He hadn't done anything. And basically, he also had gloves. And when he was questioned, he just told them everything. He told them about killing two other people. He admitted he'd been walking the streets looking for someone to kill. But didn't show much emotion. He was really factual when describing his actions to the police. And he blamed voices in his head who told him to do it. Now, it's a little bit confusing, this bit, because... there was no evidence that he'd had mental health problems, and he had been looking up on the internet people who had got off for murder because they blamed mental health issues.
Right.
So he had a lot of knowledge about this. They did assessments. They diagnosed him with autism, which was apparently really obvious, but had been completely missed by people. But if people haven't experienced a lot of autism, I think it's harder to pick up than you think.
But again, like, this is 2014 in a mainstream school. Like, I've only been teaching for 7 years, and every single year I've taught, I've had a diagnosed case of autism in my class. Like, it's not uncommon.
And he also had mental health issues in the families. And his defence argued that he was suffering from psychosis, but the prosecution claimed that he'd completely made that up.
But then is it possible to do things like that without a form of psychosis? Like, to murder random strangers? Like, how can you say that there's that there's not a mental issue?
Yeah, I mean, it is mental to murder people, by definition. It's not normal, and it's logical. Abnormal behaviour. It's
irrational.
It's the ultimate societally not normal behaviour. But he was found guilty of murder and received 27 years. So he's in prison now. Could get out in 15, I guess.
Really?
I mean,
see, for that reason, it probably maybe would have been better if they had have convicted him with psychosis. Because then potentially
he would be in a mental institution and couldn't get out. I mean, it's weird, isn't it? Because he was only 15. For a 15-year-old, you think that's a good idea? And he'd not had any periods of abuse or, you know, some traumatic childhood.
Like,
I mean, Granite died.
Yeah. Like, a lot of times I hear about prison sentences and given to young people, and I think, oh God, that's a life wasted. Like, they've got no chance when they come out. It's unfair, but the fact that he killed people he didn't even know.
Yeah.
Like, well, he could just do that again.
Yeah, I mean, it's terrifying. Terrifying. Absolutely shook the community. I mean, thank goodness he's been caught, because, you know, there could be...
There could have been more. So many more before he got there.
Yeah.
Because who suspects a total stranger? Like, you... It's usually people
and
that you know.
It's not like he killed one bloke who was on the way back from the pub in the night, then one student in the day who was not even from Britain. So there's no, like, obvious... I mean, the stabbing in the eyes was
It's just opportunistic,
the
isn't
comment.
It? Just like, oh, here, I'll have a go at this one.
Yeah.
Totally random.
Totally random. Terrifying. So that is James Fairweather.
Ooh, a good start.
A good
I like
start.
It.
Terrifying.
Are we definitely recording, Lucy?
Please say we're recording. I'm so devastated.
You'd think this was an unnecessary question to ask at this point in our podcast career. Already having a successful web podcast, RuPaul's After Party. But no! We still need to check we're recording.
This is the first time I've been in control of this.
This is the first time I've ever told this story. So, my...
Don't start angry!
Behind the scenes. sorry guys. My murderer that I've chosen, I've gone for a totally opposite end of the spectrum. So you've just given us a really recent recap.
Really modern.
Yeah, Britain's youngest serial killer. Like, it's still going on. I am going for Britain's first female serial killer.
First female.
Now, if you were to look up Britain's first female serial killer, you will get this lady, Mary Ann Cotton. If you literally look at maybe two more posts, you will realise that Mary Ann Cotton is not Britain's first female serial killer. Which is logical. I mean, she was around in the 19th century, 1800s, and as long as people have been alive, there have been people that were murdering, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's irritating people to get rid of, like...
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be... hundreds of years of people murdering.
Yeah. I just think, obviously, records weren't great, and she got very big press at the time.
And you had murdering families, like you had Sawney Bean in Scotland, that was really old, like 15th century.
That's really interesting you mention that, because actually it's believed that Mary Ann Cotton is descended from the Robson Raiders clan.
Ah!
I don't think you've heard of these. So, I don't know much about that, because her family is actually, they're situated in Durham, and so close to the Scottish borders. And so, yeah, it's believed that her family have sort of this violent history of being from this family that were into raiding.
Which is interesting, because we're actually on holiday in Northumbria at the moment, which is quite near Durham.
We are.
Not where we live, but we are travelling around today.
Having a delightful time, picking out venues for the first live tour of this podcast. If I say it enough, it's going to come true. It's like Noel Edmonds. I'm going to draw a picture of it on my hand. It's definitely going to happen. So of course she wasn't the first one, but she was the first big one. So she carries that mantle. And there's actually going to be some point soon, it might even have started, but while I was researching her, the trailers for an ITV drama about Marianne Cotton, not sure of the title, Joanne Froggatt's in it, off of Downton.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Filmed a little bit in Durham.
Oh.
It's all connected.
I'll definitely watch it. I love a documentary on a murderer.
This is the unfortunate thing. It's not a documentary. It's definitely a drama.
Oh, is it?
So listen to this and then fact check against it. I'm sure they researched a lot more intensely
than we did for an hour for the podcast.
So you have been, like you mentioned earlier, have been into murder and like weird things for a while. So as the first big female serial killer, do you think you could maybe guess at what her weapon of choice or what her mode of murder was?
I think I heard that female serial killers are more likely to stab than shoot people, because it's more close range.
Well, it's almost the opposite. One of the most popular things is the poison.
Poison.
And
because it's more like detached and kind of
Less
graphic.
Like you're not actually involved in it, you're not actually having to do any sort of like physical.
Yeah, I know, that makes sense.
So yeah, she was a typical Black Widow murderess. And she poisoned and poisoned and poisoned and poisoned until she could poison no more. She was just loving it. I mean, never go around for a dinner party at Marianne Cotton's.
No.
Like, I don't think she even knows what's the poison, what's the paprika. She's got no clue anymore. So she had a massive overlapping of lovers and a massive amount of children in and out of her life, as we're going to find out. So the start of her life, it's believed, had a bit of an impact on this. She was born into a simple mining family in the mining community of the Durham coalfields. And her father, a miner, died when she was only 10 years old. Which, of course, left her mother destitute with these children to look after. And must have been, at that time, for a woman with kids and no husband. Like,
yeah, because that's your money gone, isn't it? That's your income.
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Massive struggle. So, of course, mum's going to have to marry again. And in 1848, when her stepfather is moved into the family home, she immediately moves out.
Yeah.
Warning
time. Was she young?
So she would have been about 15 at that time.
Oh, gosh.
So,
like,
young.
Old-fashioned stepfathers are always like, there's never, like, a stepfather's like an evil word. Like,
oh, yeah.
Stepfather, you kind of jump to kind of abuse.
Evil stepfather, taking on kids that are just basically, like I say, the mother's not going to be earning much, or if anything. So it's just people.
So she's straight out the door, like, bye.
Yeah. I mean, at that time, 15 probably wasn't crazy young to have moved out, but it does seem a bit of a coincidence.
Most women would wait till they're married, though, wouldn't they? They'd kind of move out when they got a husband.
Unless they did like she did, which is she actually went away to work as a domestic servant and possibly send money home.
Yeah, yeah.
So she was working in a middle-class household, and it was her job to be general skivvy and nanny to a wonderful 12 children.
And she's 15.
15 years old, 12 children.
She's like one of the kids, basically.
Yeah, I mean,
who's had 12 children?
I mean, 12 children, and even if you're popping them out, like, bang on 9 months apart.
Some of them are going to be older than her, surely.
Well, at the very least, they're going to be 12 and down.
I think it wasn't that uncommon to have, like, a maid that was younger than some of the kids, but they would just, like, run around doing everything for them.
Ugh.
Oh, imagine rats. How much running around you'd have to do after 12 kids.
Yeah.
Can you fold that up for me?
Can you just polish my silver spoon, please? Yeah. Which, I mean, a lot of people believe is possibly why she had such a problem with her own children, in that she never actually wanted any.
Yeah.
And I can definitely...
the running around after 12 little brats.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. Like, I mean, 12, to be fair, give me 12, I could cope. Like, the 30-odd I've got at the minute are trying.
You have to take them home with you, though.
Trying bunch. I mean, to be fair as well, as I've learned, you only need one knobhead to really make it difficult. Like, just one.
Just one.
Can ruin it for us all.
The whole game off.
So, yeah, so that was her start in life. Struggle with her mum, absent dad, like, men were definitely the source of your income and the source of your destitution, yeah. And the kids were the drain on your time, on your energy, on everything. And I think she was definitely determined, this is not my life.
Yeah.
Which is why she then takes a slight place in my heart. It's a little bit of
I think we're sympathising too much with a murderer.
She was a feminist. Story. She was a massive feminist.
The iTunes reviews. These women sympathise with murderers. 5 stars.
These women. She killed men because she had to. Because she needed a way in life that they weren't providing for her. That the patriarchy was not providing for her. So her way out of that was to play the game and get married. So in 1852, still young, just 2019, she married William Mowbray and moved to Cornwall. Delightful.
Wow, lovely.
Not delightful. That would have taken bloody ages to get there from Durham in the 1800s. Can you imagine?
Would it be horse and carriage?
That's like walking to Spain.
Yeah,
I'm not having it.
That's weeks travelling.
Yeah.
That's months.
Crazy.
At least a month.
And when they got there, they were packed into some sort of shanty town, and it said that she, while during that time while they were married, that she gave birth to and lost about 4 or 5 children.
Oh, gosh.
They think this is before the murders started, that she suffered quite a series of unfortunate deaths of children.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
But so...
So are we thinking that wasn't murder, that was just...
Yeah, the theorists are saying that that's probably not the murders. I mean, it's undocumented, and I think it's just sort of trying to, like, testament to the terrible living conditions. So yeah, they're back here, well into the Industrial Revolution boom. There's overcrowding and a complete lack of anything to do. Like, she's stuck in the house, dealing with either a pregnancy or a child, and...
I mean, that genuinely does sound like my idea of hell.
Yeah, like, what's she got to look forward to?
I don't want to sympathise too
like
much.
Any, like, literally, tell me one thing that she has to look forward to.
Another baby.
She doesn't need, like...
My dad.
Yeah, my dad. Dead?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cooking dinner for her husband.
So at this point, she's like, okay, if anything goes wrong, we're fucked. And a lot of insurance companies at this time had realised this and had started what was called like a penny policy, life insurance. And she persuaded William to take out one of these life insurance. Now, again, a lot of historians, a lot of theorists have said, okay, this is a massive red flag. Like, she's obviously trying to get the money. But you would be absolutely stupid not to. her own dad had died with young children in this exact same job, and she had seen her mother have to go through this situation. Of course she knows that's a real possibility.
Yeah, no.
She's not going to do it. So yes, she took out a life insurance policy. Well done. Tick. Gold star for you.
She's always thinking.
Always thinking.
So at this point she's done nothing wrong.
Yeah, at this point she's done nothing wrong. She's had a bit of a shitty start, but she's definitely... Things have happened.
That's the bed creaking.
That's the bed creaking, sorry. Things have happened that have meant that I think will show why she started to do what she did. So then in 1865, her husband, her first husband, old Will Mowbray, died of a typhus fever, as was recorded. And she was claimed on his life insurance, which was £35.
Is that good?
It is marginally good.
Marginally
good. It is about half a year's wages. So oh, I don't think... you wouldn't blow it on a holiday, would you?
No.
And that gives you about...
But yeah, you'd think with him working, that like, I mean, she could have had that, like, 70 quid a year if he'd been alive.
Yeah.
Assuming that she's murdered him.
Well, this is the thing. He dies of typhus fever, which is... you know, obviously you get quite a bad fever, respiratory problems, stomach cramps. And at the time, it was kind of just like a coverall for various different illnesses that were caused due to the poor sanitation and overcrowding. And is also very similar to the symptoms you get when you're poisoned by arsenic.
Which was easy to get.
Definitely easy to get. Arsenic was just totally common household commodity, used for cleaning, used in some sweets, used in candles, used in so many things. Like, it was around.
Like, yeah,
I mean, to be fair, I would think a lot of husbands were poisoned. I would have been poisoning left, right and centre. Like, if you...
Oh, I'm sick of him.
Well, if you have something that easy, colourless, tasteless, traceless until long after dead, so you can have had them buried by then.
It would be easy, wouldn't
like,
it?
Like, there's almost no way they can catch you. And in a time when people are just dying willy-nilly.
Yeah.
Like, if you're that way inclined.
Yeah, it would be... I mean, there must have been a lot
of... I don't
want to
say
on.
You're stupid not to kill people.
I think that's going one step too far.
But if you're thinking...
I mean, if you had a husband that was beating you and...
Yeah,
you
if you're in a situation where you've got to kill a person. Like, I absolutely have to kill someone. I don't know what quite...
Typhus, arsenic would be your drug of choice.
In the 1800s, for sure. So, she had a girl. I mean, she's going to have children constantly, so it's going to be difficult for you to keep up. Like, don't try and tally the boys and girls that I'm going to mention. They're just all over the shop.
Fertile woman.
But she had a girl that had died as well as her husband. And so, she sent her only surviving daughter away to live with her mum at this point. So a documentary I watched on her story said, oh, she clears the decks once more. And that was a recurring theme, that they felt like she was clearing the decks to move on with her life.
Getting rid of everyone.
But at this point, I'm thinking, well, if that's literally what you're trying to do, why not just kill the other girl and say, this illness took over my household, they're all dead. Yeah. Why save the one? So I still, like, okay, her husband dies, and she sent one away to protect, like, there can be no other reason than to protect that girl.
Yeah.
Like, if she's really this sort of killer,
yeah,
you just
yeah.
killed the other one.
I mean,
one.
She must have wanted her to live.
Yeah. So I thought.
Oh.
It becomes, like, some sort of bizarre Dr. Seuss, like, repetitive story by the end. So she's on her own, completely on her own at this point. She's got half a year's wages to live on.
Have a nice bath, don't have to cook for anyone.
The finest tin bath is happening.
Put feet up.
Bit of Epsom salts. Did they had Epsom salts then, didn't they?
Probably.
Caustic powder. So she realised she needed to work. She starts working as a fever nurse. She's used to it. She's got a lot of experience in fever. And while she was working there, she met and married a guy called George Ward. While she's married to George Ward, she also begins an affair with Joseph Natras. Ooh. Important name. He's going to come back.
Natras.
Joseph Natras, and this is a recurring theme, this overlapping of lovers. I mean
she's getting them left, right and centre.
She can catch a dick like, whenever she wants.
She's getting the D.
I mean, partly the reason it's believed for that is that one really surefire way to get a guy to marry you back then was to have an unplanned pregnancy.
Yeah.
Because it was still very much, if you got a girl pregnant, you had to marry her.
Yeah, that's it.
And so she was just basically just doubling her chances.
Yeah.
Of making it happen. So she was married to George, though, also sleeping with Joseph. And only, they'd been married for 1 year and 2 months when George died of...
typhus.
A typhus fever. No children from that marriage, unfortunately. But he was gone.
So she got his money. Did she take out insurance on it?
I'm not quite sure. But Joseph moved away.
Right.
So she's fucked.
Natras.
Yes. So at this point, she starts doing what any girl does. We, these days, quick, get up. Literally what I did the other day. Dumped Tinder on it. What's that? You don't want to date me? Tinder.
Straight up. Already got the app over.
Got a date for tomorrow. I haven't. But with that sort of mindset, she was like, right, answering ads in papers, Craigslist, eBay. Oh. She was like,
eBay.
She was looking for vulnerable guys, and she answered an ad.
Who's advertising?
A newly widowed man.
Oh.
named James Robinson.
Like a wife, please.
Was
advert.
He was, well...
£3.
He was asking for help. He was asking for a nanny. His wife had died, left him with 5 children. One of the babies was very sick. And, I mean, what do? You have to work.
Yeah.
Again, no benefits, no National Health Service. Like, he needs money for the medicine. He needs somebody to look after them. He needed a lady in the house. So, Mary comes along. Within days, the baby was dead.
days
of her arriving, gone. With the sickly baby gone, Mary decided to take a vacay and go visit her mother. While she's there, she's accused of stealing from her mother. But before it can go much further, Mary's mother dies of typhus. And she brings her daughter home with her that she'd been with her. So within weeks, less than a month of her mother dying, the sickly baby dying, within weeks of being back, every single child in that household is dead.
No.
From fever, from typhus.
That's brutal.
Every single one of them. She then, it's believed that in a vulnerable situation, she had seduced... James, they have to get married, but the baby that's born dies within 3 months.
Of typhus. No.
You're getting it.
God, I mean, she's a quick worker, isn't she?
Yeah. Like, I think at this point she just had no patience. Like,
yeah, they were, no one's clocking on.
Like, maybe with her own kids, she's like, I'll keep them until they're irritating. With his kids, he was like, yeah, just get rid of them all.
Yeah, done.
Like, there's literally nothing holding me back at this point. She did have another child with him. And this was about 1868 at this point. So about 30-ish years old. She's already had 3 husbands, countless children dead. But George, he was... James was quite a sharp tool. And he discovered that Marianne had been doctoring...
So he's the one whose kids that...
He's the one, the widowed one, and she killed all of his children, then married.
Yeah.
He discovered that she'd been doctoring the amounts of money in his passbooks for the building society. Like, I mean, it's not catch me if you can, it's literally just... just right
into... Dead easy to fraud.
That's 6s and 8 now. That she'd been doctoring amounts of money, squirreling it away, and that he was now in debt for £60, which
so she killed
a year's wages. She didn't kill him.
Oh.
Because he'd found her out, he was like, get out.
Yeah, bye.
You're done. Like, you've taken my money. Like, I could handle the death of the children because I was getting the poon. Yeah. But take my money.
And... I mean, he must have suspected those deaths, don't surely. He's like, kill my children. That's one thing. Like, take my money.
You can suck the pain away. But take my money, no.
No, out woman. So she's legally married.
Well, yeah, a lot of children have died, but when you look in the statistics of the time, one expert on this documentary I watched was mentioned that death rates were chasing the birth rates of the Lauren graph. Like, they were matching each other.
Good God.
2 in 10 children wouldn't live to be 1 year old. So 20% of children were dead before one. In the coal fields particularly, 180 in 1,000 births were stillbirths. So that's almost another 20% weren't even born live. So if we're thinking, like, 20% didn't live to one, 20% were stillbirths, that's like 40% of children who weren't living.
That's just pretty common.
Pretty common. But then if we look a little bit further, I mean, obviously she killed other people's children, all of her stepchildren. Marianne actually gave birth to 13 of her own. Out of those 13, 11 died of typhoid-related diseases.
No.
Which is around about, instead of the 40% national average, she's working on 85.
85.
Like, she is...
That's not unlucky, that's...
Yeah, she's up everywhere. There. She's really pushing the envelope on infant mortality over here. And again, it's the arsenic. It's completely untraceable. Like, so common to get. Like, it was almost like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Easy. So, she's on her own, completely. She moves in with a friend, a lady friend of hers, who is also living with her newly widowed brother.
Oh, Marianne, kill him.
pretty much. Her friend died after 3 weeks of her being there.
No.
She'd signed over her life, like, in her will, she'd signed her life savings over to Mary. And she had bigamously married the brother, because obviously old Georgie didn't give her a divorce. Don't give her that pleasure. And not Georgie, so James. Oh, gosh, these names. It's basically James or George.
Yeah.
William. Or any of the kings. They're done. He'd still married her. So she bigamously married the brother of her friend.
She's racking up these weddings.
During this time. I mean, the dresses, darling. Yeah,
pretty same one.
Yeah, it's probably just the dress she wears every day.
Yeah.
Joseph Natras, devil on the mattress.
Natras on the mattress.
Is back. She starts shagging him on the side too.
My goodness.
Like.
He's back for more.
Yeah, of course.
So on the side of this widowed brother.
So the widowed brother she's married to. She's shagging.
Natras.
Champion of the mattress. After 1 year of being married to her husband number four, he dies of
typhus,
and in moves Joseph. Joseph seems another slightly shrewder character.
I wonder how long it was between him dying and him moving in. He was like literally
possibly minutes
as they're wheeling him out. He's just hovering around the door waiting to go.
Like, yeah, like English A&E. We've got a bed free.
Yeah,
how can you get? So he moves in, which I don't know. You could say it's sharp of him not to marry her. But then at the same time, the quickest way for Mary to kill you is to live with her.
Yeah.
He moves in. Now, Mary can't stay still. You've got to overlap the men. Like, you can't, like, I think it's a fear. Like, a fear of any minute now, they could be dead, I could be on my own.
Yeah.
You can't leave it to chance. Like, and again, it sounds like I really sympathise with her, but there's that desperation running through of if you don't do something, you're going to be on the streets, you're going to be on your own. And so she meets a guy at the fever hospital, Richard Quick Manning, starts an affair with him. Like, she can't put it to chance that Joseph's going to be there forever for her. She's already seeing another guy. So in order to get this guy a little bit more money than old Joe, she's going to have to get rid of the baggage. Starts killing off the kids with Joseph. And Joseph. They're all gone. 1872.
What, Natras is gone?
Yeah. Like, he might have been a good shag, but he didn't have the money that Quick Manning had.
Wow.
So he's gone. Now, here enters our hero of the story.
Hero.
Da-da-da-da! Have you watched any of the US presidential debates?
Not really. Not even.
So, one of the debates, there was this guy called Kenneth Bone.
Kenneth Bone, what a name.
Yeah, already you're in love with him, right? And he sort of became a little bit of an internet hero of the... He basically just asked a question. That's all that he did. He had a weird name.
Did he ask it in a quiet, sarcastic, deadpan voice?
He was a little bit of a wiener, as I would say. Like, he had a moustache. little glasses. Aww. Rotund.
Oh, I want to look him up.
Yeah, have a look at a picture.
Oh,
of...
I haven't got the internet.
We can't because we're in bloody Northumbria. I'll show you a picture. He looks like a Pixar character. Nice red jumper. And Ken Bone, like I say, became a bit of an internet hero, like a man of the people. Like, he asked the question and we love you. So our hero is a similar ilk. Thomas Riley. He was a local parish relief observer. He was basically like a volunteer at the church to go and do the bookkeeping. Like, it's not even your job. Yeah. Like, this is a really boring job. We're not going to pay you for it.
I'll do it anyway.
That's fine. I'll just come and do it. And he had become suspicious of these deaths. Like, there were...
Finally, someone!
I mean, she has a back bedroom that is wallpapered with marriage, birth, death certificates. Like, she has piled them up. Like, she shreds them. It's bedding for the hamsters at this point. So he's suspicious. And here comes her undoing. Mary had one son left. At the time, she took him to Riley, who was in charge of local parish issues, and said, will you take him into the workhouse? He's sick. Like, will you take him? I can't cope with him. And he rejected him. He said, he seems really healthy. Like, I'm not going to take your son. Just for...
That's pretty weird, isn't it?
Like, you can keep your son. Like, I'm not going to take him. And she was like, no. He's really ill. Like, he'll be dead in 2 weeks. All the cotton children die. They definitely die. You have to take him. And... She
was say about it. It's
was, right, like, portentous. She said to him, no, he's definitely going to be dead within 2 weeks. Dead. Within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Of typhus! typhus fever, of course. So, at this point, he is, like, ridiculous. You told me he was going to die. He's dead. So he goes absolutely apeshit. He goes to the GP and he says, right, this death certificate can't be issued. We need an inquest. So she can't claim any...
Oh, I love that he can't let it rest.
Yeah, he is like, no, I'm going
to... He's like, oh, there's something not right here. I'm going to look it up. I'm just going to go to the GP's office. Definitely. I'm just going to find out the paperwork. I'm just going to look at the paperwork.
So no death certificate, no insurance money. Like, this is a complete spanner in the works.
Oh, I love Tom Riley.
He does. Orders a RAC test for arsenic.
Oh, yes, he does.
And she is arrested the next morning. They then start exhuming more bodies, including Joseph Natras, all of them now showing signs of arsenic poisoning. She is banged to rights. I mean, like, at the beginning, we sympathise. There's a lot of environmental things, a lot of circumstantial things that you were like, okay, maybe.
I mean, I don't
maybe,
feel so
maybe.
Bad about it.
No, she was just killing them off. Like,
I mean, she must have enjoyed it because there were other ways. That, I mean, there was the workhouse. She could have just up sticks and left and disappeared. I mean, you could then. You can't disappear now, but you could disappear then. Like, you could just go.
She could have gone off the grid. She could have disappeared.
Yeah, and then married some random up north or something.
So the final twist in her story that kind of led to her being so notorious is that she went to trial and was actually pregnant during the trial.
No.
So it had to be postponed, and then the press got involved. I mean...
Plot twist, it's Tom Riley's.
I mean, but that's basically just... I mean, for several reasons, like... Like, it was common, it was known as pleading the belly. Like, women would try and maybe get pregnant at that time.
So they're more sympathetic.
Garner sympathy. But the press just went totally the opposite way with it. I mean, she was a super villain. She was like a local bogeyman. Like, the kids would write skipping rhymes about her, songs about her. And again, going a little bit back to the feminist issues, like, part of the reason they felt that she was so evil was because her crimes were against the nature of a woman. Like, because it was the opposite of being maternal, it was thought to be more evil than anything anyone could have done. Like, more than a crime of passion, more than anything else. I think, you know, as some women don't want kids, like, at that time, what could she have done? If people are fucking her and there's no contraception... Like,
yeah, you're going to get pregnant.
I'm not saying you should kill your children, but I just
let's just put it, I'm not saying you should kill your children.
I'm not saying you should kill your children, but I think, like, and now we are coming from a different mindset. Like, then there's a desperation that we are never going to feel.
Yeah. Like, and we are never,
there's no situation that we could be in where we'll feel that fear, where we'll feel that desperation.
Not in the UK.
So things went really crazy. She had her baby, the final Margaret, who was
Margaret.
The only one that survived. I was taken away from her in 1873 in January, on the 7th of January. And then on the 24th of March in 1873, Marianne
hanged.
Cotton was hung. And that's the end of her story.
So they didn't kill her with arsenic, though.
I mean, we know that she's a complete sex machine, like, killing the men. Do you want to see a picture of her?
Go on, then. I mean, imagining some bombshell. I mean, she's got all these men falling at her feet.
Yeah, I mean, she wants to get married, she gets married. Yeah. So this is... Mate, could you just... I mean, could you describe to the listeners what you're saying? When she died, so 73, so she would have been up 40.
She looks about 75. I mean, she's wearing a polka dot jacket.
More of like a poncho, I would go
for. Yeah, with a bow over around her neck. And then, like, it looks like one of those ornate plaited buns on her head. Like an actual, like, bread roll.
Yeah. But she's got the centre parting that suits no one.
Yeah, and, I mean, she's got her mouth hanging open. So, like, when you're a kid and someone says, "You catching flies?" That kind of gormless look. Yeah. I mean... She can't have known they were taking that photo.
That was maybe her appeal. Like, she was walking around with her mouth open and men were just going, "Bet she wants a dick in there."
But really?
Yeah, I showed this to you when my friends, I was like, "Oh, have a look, give me your first impressions on this woman." And he was like, "She must have had some attractive ankles." Because there's nothing that would draw you to her. No. Like, she's the sort of woman that looks like she has,
I mean, she's
like,
1,000 cats. Yeah, she's not glam.
So, transport me back to the 1870s because I would be queen of the host.
Sweeping up the man.
Yeah. So that's that one. Marianne Cotton, Britain's first female serial killer, but not really.
Thank you so much for listening to episode one. I really enjoyed it, even though we had to do part of it twice. Please, if you enjoyed it, look for Slaughter on iTunes. Subscribe to us.
It's laughter.
Please subscribe to us. Please review us. Please tell us what you thought. We can follow us on Twitter as well at Slaughter the Pod. And we will be back very, very soon. Have a great Halloween.
And remember, listening to Slaughter doesn't make you a psycho.
Killing people does.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.